WHD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. The four-day pause in the fighting in Gaza, which begins Friday morning, will set off a flurry of activity in the region. CBS's Linda Kenyon has details.
The temporary ceasefire will allow for the release of the first group of hostages held by Hamas, while hundreds of trucks will make their way into Gaza.
We have launched 326 trucks full of food, nutrition for children, shelter, including tents and personal items.
Abdullah bin al-Rabia is an advisor to the Saudi royal court.
Medications and medical supplies and 20 ambulances.
He hopes this is just the beginning.
The number of trucks going are very limited.
That number, he says, should be doubled. Linda Kenyon, CBS News.
In the West Bank, protests are underway. CBS's MTS Tayeb is there and explains why.
They march through the streets of Ramallah, shouting the deal between Israel and Hamas isn't enough. They want to see an end to the war on Gaza completely and the release of all Palestinian prisoners.
Thousands have pounded the pavement in Northern California to help fight hunger. CBS Sacramento reporter Rachel Wolf.
Sacramento Food Bank's annual run to feed the hungry broke records, drawing more than 31,000 on its 30th anniversary.
I think there's a misconception that people don't work that need food programs. Quite the contrary. I mean, we're seeing more and more dual income folks that just simply can't make ends meet.
In the Midwest, there are some options this holiday for those having trouble putting food on the table.
I'm Bruce Marcus in Eagle River, Wisconsin, where a local church and other nonprofits hold a community Thanksgiving on the holiday. Volunteers prepare a full meal with turkeys and all the fixings. It's free and open to everyone. Pastor Lawrence Glenn is one of the organizers.
Food's great. They get to meet a lot of people from the community, and we get to meet people that we wouldn't see otherwise.
Tom Palmer attends these community meals.
And you never know what you say to somebody that can impact their life in a positive way.
Black Friday has been a holiday tradition in the U.S. for decades. Now it's growing in popularity in other nations, even those that don't have a Thanksgiving on their calendar. Heinz Ofert, who hails from Germany, was shopping this week in Santa Barbara, California, and explains.
Similar thing. They are just starting to have a similar day on the same day. But not everybody knows what Black Friday is, so it's, well, different and similar at the same time.
Speaking of shopping, more Americans are expected to buy now and pay later for the holidays. This is CBS News.
Make the hiring process work for you. With Indeed's end-to-end hiring solution, you can attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Start at Indeed.com/credits.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Well, here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The gun deer season in Wisconsin is heading into its final weekend. A proposed bill in the state legislature aims to curb the spread of chronic wasting disease. Democratic Representative Katrina Shankland is proposing $2 million for carcass disposal sites and $100,000 to teach hunters about the brain wasting disease and why it's important to dispose of carcasses properly. Today's a big day in Greendale. The high school band is marching in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in New York City. The Greendale Band is one of just six high school bands from around the country to have the honor this year. It's the second time the Marching Panthers are appearing in the Macy's Parade. The last time was in 2016. And that's what you need to know. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Packers beat the Lions on Thanksgiving Day. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers with a 29-22 win over the Lions. Detroit now 0-7 at home here on Thanksgiving Day. The game starting off with a deep pass from Jordan Love to Christian Watson for 53 yards, setting up the Packers' first touchdown.
Something we put in this week that, you know, we thought was going to work, and we were confident in it, and came out, you know, obviously put the ball up there, and Christian went up there and made a great catch.
Head coach Matt LaFleur said he almost canceled that play.
It was one of those deals. deal. As a matter of fact, I almost changed that first play call. I was kind of mulling it over quite a bit, and I texted Jordan this morning and told him I was going to change it to something else, and he said he wanted this call, so I said okay.
I asked Watson if he knew that play was almost canceled. Instead, he says he has to take the pressure off his quarterback.
So, you know, when stuff, you know, isn't going our way as a team and it's all getting thrown on Jordan, you know, I'm trying to, you know, find ways to, you know, take that off of him.
With sports from Ford Field in Detroit, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the mid-teens. Sunshine's back tomorrow, but cold again, high near 30. Low 30s with clouds on Saturday, couple of flurries, breezy, and mid-30s Sunday. The wind at times gusting as high as 35 miles an hour. Staying cold next week. Currently 21 degrees.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. You're tapped in to the issues affecting the Valley and all of Wisconsin. Consider us the bartenders of friendly local talk. This is 93.5 The Tap.
Show.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. This is the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a government watchdog group, Accountable. I know this is going to be shocking. Yeah, I hope you're sitting down. They have come up with, well, the inflation, you know, that we're told it's all Joe Biden's fault. At least, you know, in my neck of the woods, they're blaming Biden for all the inflation problems. Turns out, and I guess shocking, corporate America never enjoying better profits, shareholders lining their pockets like never before. But I know it's Joe Biden's fault. Yeah. While the wealth class has gotten, well, wealthier, the working class has gotten screwed. And here to share some thoughts on the idea of getting screwed, I've asked our good friend J.D. Scholten to come talk with us. He's a senior advisor at the American Economic Liberties Project. He's a writer and creator of, well, You're Probably Getting Screwed newsletter. You can check out his thing at screwed.substack.com. Also running for State House here in Iowa. J.D., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, it's great to be back.
It is great to see you finally in person, and thanks for all the work you've done here in Sioux City to help us grab people and sit down with folks. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no problem. It's an honor to have you guys, and it's great to see you guys in person.
So, surprised? Surprised that the working class, again, getting screwed?
Not at all. You know, we're seeing this pretty consistently with the CEOs having to talk to their shareholders and having to tell the truth in some of these reports saying that, hey, this is an opportunity for us to raise prices on consumers. And it came out this morning that, Kroger's and another grocery store, two of the top five are going to working on merging. You know, that ultimately will hurt our prices at the grocery store. You know, this is all a common theme, and you know, I don't understand why more people, especially more Democrats, aren't talking about antitrust as it works to our economy, because at the end of the day, consumers are getting screwed, workers are getting screwed, shareholders and the CEOs are getting paid.
Yeah, where's today's Teddy Roosevelt? I ask this all the time. Yeah. Where's today's TR? Who's going to be the one who's going to step up and say, we got to start breaking up some of these monopolies? Because in industry after industry, we find three, four companies dominating the industry and then colluding, or let's use a different word, since colluding seems to be loaded, cooperating together to raise prices, to line their pockets, and well, screw us.
Well, and here in Sioux City, we're an immigrant meatpacking town since the 1880s, and we continue to be. And so we see that a lot in agriculture here. We have different forms of monopoly where Sioux City used to be a hub, and money used to be coming here, where now it's extracted out. And just this past week, Tyson shipped 500 jobs, and these are the more of the white collared jobs, but IBP used to have a headquarters across the river in North Sioux City, South Dakota. Tyson bought them out in 2001, and now they're moving everybody down to Arkansas. And so for our community, that's over 500 jobs, and that's just direct jobs, not counting the shipping there and all the other stuff that goes into that. And so Sioux City's getting hit hard, and will get hit hard here in the next year or two.
So, you know, part of what we're doing on this tour is going to places that, you know, at one point or another, we viewed as that Mayberry kind of Leave It to Beaver community. You think about our grandparents' generation, who built the most prosperous working class in the history of civilization so that they could have better lives, so that they could raise their families on one income. And I know that that's almost impossible today, and for most people, even impossible to imagine that it was ever possible. But we once did that, and then things got bad, and sadly, what the wealth class has said is, well, it's those unions.
Yep.
The unions made things too expensive. So we of course then we had to go and exploit people. They made us exploit people, JD.
Well, here's kind of a little bit of what happened here. When my family moved here in 1984, we moved from Central Iowa here. My dad got the head baseball job at a Division II college here, and what a worker could get at one of these meatpacking plants was 14 to 17 bucks an hour back in the early 80s. Right before the pandemic, guess how much they could get? The same exact price.
Bucks. Yeah. No, I talk about this all the time.
4 decades later.
I talk about this all the time. When I started in the freight industry back in the late 80s, it was 15 bucks an hour. Today, starting that job is like 16.80.
Yeah.
And that's 35 plus years that it just hasn't, wages haven't gone up. But where has that wealth gone?
Right.
That's the question, because prices keep going up. A gallon of gas was much cheaper back then. I had a much better standard of living 30 years ago, as most of us did. And that's where I think the anger is coming from, because people are working longer and harder to just maintain and not fall further behind.
Exactly. And that's again, where I get frustrated with the Democratic Party is like, this is what we should be talking about consistently, more and more about, because this is what's impacting the majority of the people. You know, when you go out and talk to folks, and that's what when I ran for Congress in 2018 and 2020, you know, you go out there and just talk to them, they're feeling it. And this area has not bounced back since the 2008 economic crisis, let alone with the pandemic and everything. There's just bumps, and we feel, or there's a sense that the money doesn't stay in these communities anymore. They get extracted out. You got Dollar General coming in, undercutting local grocery stores all across Iowa. You have the meat packers, the four main ones control 85% of the meat market. They're screwing the farmers, they're screwing the consumers, and they're screwing the workers.
So again, I come back to what you just said. You know, why don't the Democrats hone in on this? Because the inflation thing, I mean, the right is beating them over the head. And inflation, it's all Joe Biden's fault. It's Bidenflation. And you go, wait a second, is Biden in every boardroom and every CEO suite across this country where they're making the decisions to raise prices on consumers when they don't have to? Is he in on those meetings? Did he take a day off from learning coding in the basement to steal elections to then go and raise prices too? I mean, for a guy who's Sleepy Joe and not very bright, right, according to them, he's really effective.
And that's the narrative, the two-pronged narrative they have going on, is he's too sleepy to do anything, and then he's too manipulative to...
he's a wily one, that Joe Biden.
But it is frustrating, and it's, you know, talking to these folks who think that way, just on a pretty regular basis around these parts, it's tough. And our local radio station used to be very normal. Now it's 10 hours of propaganda a day before. And then in the summers, they have the local minor league baseball team at night. And it's just, it's very frustrating, because I go on these shows and I talk about just what we're talking about right now, how like these corporations are screwing us over, and we all feel it here. And then they'll want to talk about some, what happens in bathrooms or wokeism or anything like that. And at the end of the day, I go, you know, all that stuff, like, what impacts you more on a daily basis? And why aren't you talking? You spent all this time talking about this other stuff, this cultural bullshit. What about the economy and what's everyone feeling here in Sioux City today? Why aren't you spending more time on that? And it's
what's the answer? I mean, because I have people who I ask the same question. because, you know, I look at, you know, myself, you know, all of these issues, the transgender issue we dealt with 30 years ago in the workplace.
Yeah.
And I say this all the time. We had a guy, let's call him Ron. Ron was a good worker. He was somebody who came to work every day. Everybody knew Ron. Ron went away for about 6 months, came back. Ron was Rana. Do you know who cared? Nobody.
Right.
Because she came back, she did her job, she got the same wages, same benefits, same working conditions, same everything, and came, did the job, went home, led her life. Everybody seemed to get along. Everybody right. seemed to, they went home, led their lives. Yeah. It wasn't the end of humanity and the end of civilization, and it wasn't Armageddon, and there weren't angry forces going to come and eat us. People just led their lives.
Exactly. Exactly. We got a Casey's gas station right down the street, and you know what? Instead of men's bathroom on the right and women's on the left, let's just have unisex bathrooms on both sides. Problem solved. Like, it's an architectural issue.
Yep. No, in the woods, you know, we go hiking. In the woods, there's one bathroom.
Right. There you go.
This doesn't seem to be all, again, yeah. but what, and this is where I come back to, this has to be the way the wealth class operates, yep. because if we were focused on how bad they're screwing us,
yeah.
how much they're stealing from us, and the Rand Corporation, you know, did a study not too long ago and kind of put a number, $100 trillion over the last 45 years or some just obscene number, a massive redistribution of wealth. You come out of this pandemic, another massive redistribution of wealth, and yet we don't hear that
right.
so much.
Exactly. And it there's a recent study that showed what CEOs get paid almost 400 in 2021. They got 399 times as much as the average worker, and just from 1978 to now, that's gone up 1460%. It's just, you know, it's the haves versus the have-nots right now, and we see that in all aspects of life. You got that Brett Favre with the haves screwing over folks down in Mississippi. You got just, it's happening everywhere.
That's crazy. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with J.D. Scholten, advisor at the American Economic Liberties Project, also a writer of your Probably Getting Screwed newsletter. You can check out his work, screwed.substack.com. Also running for state house here in Iowa. Hope folks will take a look at his website. What's your campaign website?
Scholten, Scholten, ScholtenForIowa.com.
And we'll make sure we get links out on social media and how you can take a look at that. So the question then, you know, as you're out there talking with people and as you're focusing on this issue, do you think people are getting it? I mean, because, you know, part of the premise of what we're talking about is I go back to 2016 and I think Donald Trump hit something very important. And I use my family as the example. They didn't vote. They were never voters. They were never people engaged in the political process. They were complainers, mm-hmm. but never voters. He made them get out to vote. Yeah, they're racist. They're homophobic. They're misogynistic because of the generation they grew up in. I'm not justifying it. I'm not. It just is what it is. But what propelled them to vote, to register and actually vote, was that he sold them on the idea that he was going to recreate that prosperity of the past. He was going to bring those union jobs back that afforded them a lifestyle that they haven't had since they went away. And I think, again, take the message, take the blind squirrel finding the nut and use it.
Right. Right. Well, and I see that all throughout here. It's, to me, I think so much of politics of the past few years, it's not so much left versus right. It's who's voting versus who's not voting. And what I see around town and across the state of Iowa is, like, when I stop at a gas station and talk to the cashier, more likely than not, they're not voting. And I'm like, you're the type of person who needs to be voting, because do you want a better wage? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, well, I'm fighting to raise the minimum wage. I mean, that's bare minimum. That would help you and raise your minimum wage. I'm like, would you like better health care? And they're like, we don't even have health insurance. I'm like, I'm for universal health care because for that reason right there, and to get you health care, to get you the care that you need. It's just, you know, it's in just getting that message out, and that's it. Like, it doesn't need to be more than that.
And that's an important distinction to make, because understand, the wealth class knows that as long as we're eating each other, as long mm-hmm. as we're focused on our divisions, white, black, male, female, gay, straight, you know, wherever the other ones are, as long as they can keep inventing ways to get us to eat each other, we're not going to go after them.
Right.
And I had a friend, Rich Ojeda, come on not too long ago, and he said, you know, I'm not talking about eating the rich, but maybe just one of them. And I'm going, no. Yeah. I get the enthusiasm, but
what, you probably won't.
That's why we want to vote.
Yeah, you probably won't meet anybody who's more focused on antitrust than myself. And here's my thing: is that like I'm not like. At the end of the day, like I want corporations to thrive, but I want them to lift all of us up if they're going to thrive. But I don't want them to thrive if it hurts communities, if it hurts the workers, if it hurts just others, basically.
You know? A corporation is supposed to be there for the benefit of the community. If you go back to the founding of the country, they had a list of things that they had to do, and being a benefit to the community was a big part of that.
Absolutely. And that's, I mean, to me, that's like, I harp on Dollar General all the time because I think they're,
as you should,
they're the perfect example of what's wrong with our economy, where their workers are getting $8-$9 an hour. Oftentimes are working in unsafe conditions because there's one person for the whole store. Yep. Even though you're in the second most agriculture producing district in America, they don't sell fresh produce or fresh meat, and they're undercutting local groceries. So now people are having to travel 40 minutes to go grocery shopping that one time a week or what have you. And then on all of that, the money you spend there doesn't stay in the community. So other than maybe property tax, I don't see a benefit for what they do in this state or across this nation.
But this is one of those things where true conservatives, and I try to reach out to my friends who may still be true conservatives, because I think they've really screwed up what a conservative is. But true conservatives would agree with you. We want competition. Remember when we used to talk about competition?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we used to talk about, you know, the marketplace and you know, more people in it, more competition, that being a good thing? Mm-hmm. You know, the quote-unquote free market. What we've got now is a monopolistic market where, like you've pointed out, you've got a handful of companies that dominate. And not only do they dominate the industries, Again, I don't want to use the word collude because people may get upset by that, but they coordinate each other, because it's interesting how all the gas stations have about the same, you know, cost of gas, same cost for whatever they're selling. It seems interesting how there really isn't that competition on price that we're told is supposed to be there, especially since only a handful of companies actually control what the prices are.
And that's the same thing, agriculture. We're seeing it in every aspect of agriculture. There's been monopoly after monopoly on price fixing lawsuits that are happening in the past few years. And it's just, you know, I've talked a lot about food security is national security. And the pandemic put a spotlight on our supply chain when it comes to our agricultural system. And it's nuts. We're so vulnerable. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be that way. And like, you go to any grocery store and you see the fruit from Honduras or somewhere else. Well, we can grow everything, almost everything here in the United States. And all of that is policy created. I mean, the fact that 60% of the apple juice we consume in the United States comes from concentrate from China. Like, think about the environmental impact on that. Like, it's absurd. We could have...
Yeah, but the argument, JD, to that is, well, we can't find anyone who wants to work on the farms because that's hard work. We can't find people to work in these manufacturing. We can't find people to do the jobs.
Well, everything you eat is pretty much subsidized in some form right now. And so we're choosing these policies. And we got the farm bill coming up in 2023. It's absurd what we're funding. And then they tell us, oh, you should be eating this many vegetables a day. Well, here in Iowa, 90% of the food we consume is imported, and we can grow almost anything. This is one of the breadbaskets of the world.
I thought this is where the food comes from.
Yeah, no, we know how to feed animals. That's non-humans, I guess. But that's
So the question is, you know, and I keep coming, I look at someone like you, who, you know, a very successful athlete, you know, did very well. Why do you want to get in the middle of all this? I mean, you could very easily lead a comfortable life doing anything else but engaging in this. Why is this important?
There was an article somebody sent me a few years ago that changed my life forever. It said, life's not about the pursuit of happiness. It's about the pursuit of meaning. And I've lived a happy life doing other things, but A lot of things happened. The 2016 election was one of those things. I went to visit my grandma, who was on her deathbed, and the last thing she told me was, "You got to take care of the farm." And I live here in Sioux City. Our farm's 3.5 hours away, and we rented out to a family friend, but that hit home. And then I started looking at, oh, what's actually happening in the farm economy right now, and how consolidation is get bigger, get out. And just one thing led to another. And my grandma meant the world to me. And so here I am, still have that fire burning inside me about, you know, it's about fairness. You know, just a lot of it, and just, you know, do good, seek justice type of mentality. And so the state house race, I'm running unopposed, so I don't think I can mess that up too much. So I'm really looking forward to going down to the state capitol and raising some hell and trying to do the best I can to represent my part of Sioux City.
And helping working people and helping make better lives. For me, the North Star is always, how do we make people's lives better?
Yeah.
I've said, you know, I'm sure people are tired of hearing it, but I grew up in a housing project on the west side of Cleveland. We were where they put the the socioeconomic ladder on top of.
Yeah.
I think about that kid growing up in that place where I grew up, the kid living in the same house I grew up in. Does that child have the same opportunities that I've been afforded?
Yeah.
Because I've led a very gifted, very, very blessed life. I'm very happy with what I could have never imagined as a child where I've ended up. But I want that kid to have that opportunity, and I want the policies that helped me. Because I'm not Horatio Alger. I didn't pull myself up by bootstraps. There were plenty of people who gave me a hand, whether it was playing football or it was, you know, education, or it was, you know, getting a job, or it was, yep, you know, advice. There were lots of people along the way who helped, and I think we need that kind of reminder, that kind of community, to move us along. And I'm hopeful in this moment.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I see the younger generation kind of moving in that direction.
Yeah, no, and that's the thing is there's so many factors that are working against us, but you know, in all this darkness, in running against for Congress twice, and we ended up moving the needle 24 points in 2018. Your buddy Richard outperformed me just by a little bit more. You know, it's very frustrating when you give it everything you have and you lose, and seeing the battles out there. But at the end of the day, you know, there's a lot of wins and there's a lot of hope to be had out there. And there's a gentleman who's from across the river in South Sioux City, Nebraska, who's a hero of mine. His name's Frank LaMare. He passed away a couple years ago, but he was one of the first people I asked, because he was a Native American activist. He had a lot of uphill battles in his life. He had some wins and he had a lot of losses as well. But at the end of the day, he goes, JD, if you want change, you have to get uncomfortable. And once you get uncomfortable, you have to get others uncomfortable. And I mean, I lived out of an RV for 4 years running for Congress, talking to anybody and everybody and just zigzagging across Northwest Iowa. And I had a blast, but I got uncomfortable. I went out there and talked to folks, put a lot of my life on hold to do this because I'm passionate about it. And you know, when you get that and you build this movement that's happening, and you know, you're going to have some defeats in all this, but at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking forward to taking what we've built and take it down to the state house and to try and do something pretty powerful.
The elevator pitch on why JD Scholten for state house. I mean, you're running unopposed, but you know,
right.
what's that? What is it that you want people to know?
At the end of the day, I talk about fix, fight, and secure. Fix healthcare, fight for an economy that works for all of us, and secure our education. Because in the state of Iowa, when I graduated high school, we were first in the nation in education, and now we're not funding it at the capacity we should be. We're not even at inflation marks right now. And the Republicans in the state have attacked teachers. They've attacked public education. And that's the one thing. It's on our state quarter, foundation in education. So those are the three things: fix, fight, and secure.
That sounds like a good bumper sticker, and it's something that Democrats don't do at all, which is why, can we clone you? Can we move you around to a bunch of different places? Because that's the message. This is what I want all Democrats to be talking about. These are the issues that are really important, and again, these are the kitchen table issues that I think are so important for people across the spectrum. But JD, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Always great having you on the program. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you for having me.
Good stuff, J.D. Scholten. Make sure you check out his website, screwed.substack.com. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a quick look at that. Quick break right back here from Sioux City, Iowa. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Keeping the Chambers of Commerce.
You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
CBS News Brief. Egypt says more than 34,000 gallons of diesel and four trucks of gas will be delivered to Gaza when a four-day pause starts Friday. 200 trucks of aid are expected to enter Gaza daily. Saudi Royal Court Advisor Abdullah bin Al-Rabiya.
Our biggest challenge is that those trucks need to go through Rafah Corridor. The challenge that the number of trucks going are very limited.
Former State Department official Stuart Seldowitz is charged with a hate crime after being caught on video launching into an Islamophobic rant against a New York City food cart vendor, CBS's Roxana Saberi.
Seldowitz had been a career State Department official and also worked for the Obama administration as acting director for South Asia at the National Security Council.
Giving back this holiday, a church in Eagle River, Wisconsin, holds a free community Thanksgiving open to everyone. Pastor Lawrence Glenn.
It's just an attempt to try to help people in the community who might need some help and to be there for people who might be lonely.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. A fugitive is now formally charged with the death of his 12-year-old son, whose decomposing body was found in a home in Milwaukee last month. The Milwaukee County District Attorney's Office filed reckless homicide charges this week against Romuan Moy. No one is sure exactly when Jackery Robinson died or how. Meanwhile, Moy is on the run and there's a warrant out for his arrest. Prosecutors in Wisconsin may Sunday get more time to file sexual assault charges. Republican Senator Andre Jacques is introducing a bill to extend the statute of limitations for sex crimes in Wisconsin from 10 years to 20. Jacques says prosecutors in other states have 20 years to press sexual assault charges. A similar bill passed the state Senate last year but stalled in the Assembly. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Chris from Middleton. Welcome to the show. What do you got for us?
I'm a Democrat. I totally agree that there's been too much corporate influence probably in the Democratic Party. I liked how Bernie talked about economic issues, and I agree we need more of that. But I don't think we can also afford to shy away from the identity politics. In fact, we got to lean into the identity politics and not be shy about it.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Tonight, mostly clear, a low in the mid-teens. Sunshine's back tomorrow, but cold again, high near 30. Low 30s with clouds on Saturday, couple of flurries, breezy, and mid-30s Sunday. The wind at times gusting as high as 35 miles an hour. Staying cold next week. Currently 21 degrees.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Tap into what Chippewa Falls, Eau Claire, and the Chippewa Valley is talking about today. This is 93.5 The Tap. Online at thetap.fm.
Journalism, but of absentee corporate owners plundering journalism.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So rebuilding America. I got to tell you, you know, one of the big policies that the Biden administration is rebuilding this country. Now, look, I'd love to have seen that infrastructure bill much bigger, much chunkier, much more investment. $1.2 trillion to be invested in our roads, our bridges, our waterways, all of the things that make our country go. And as I said earlier, while we were in Chicago, hour 45 minutes to get across Chicago. And you would think I'd be angry, but no, Joe Biden did that because we're actually investing in the infrastructure and rebuilding our roads and bridges that haven't been done in decades. And you know what else they're doing? They're doing it so that workers benefit in this. And that's the important part of this. We're going to make these investments, but we're going to make lives better as well. Here to share some thoughts on, well, how we make lives better and the work that he does here in Sioux City, Iowa. I've asked Ernie Colt to come talk with us. He's a business representative with the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. You can check out their website, ncsrrcc.org. Don't worry about that. We'll get links out on social media how you can check that out. Ernie, thanks for taking time for us.
You bet, Rick. Good to be with you.
What a beautiful city. We've enjoyed our time here. And, you know, the people here at the CWA Hall have been fabulous. Just a great environment. Tell me, share some thoughts on the environment here, the city that you call home.
Sioux City, Woodbury County, it's a great place to live, great place to grow. I've got 13 grandkids going to Sioux City Public Schools. It's just it's big enough. We have everything, but it's still small enough to really have some successful teaching going on in the schools. I'm really proud of the Sioux City school system.
Well, that's rare to hear in this day and age, because normally what we hear is those greedy teachers, they're indoctrinating our children.
You know, we've got some great school teachers here in Sioux City, and always supportive of those teachers and what they do. And you know, today's world, it's a whole different animal out there teaching kids.
Yeah.
So we're definitely supportive of them.
I got three kids. I can't keep them in line myself. I can't imagine, 20, 30, 40. And we were in Detroit not too long ago. I had a teacher tell me they had 50 kids in a kindergarten class.
Right.
I don't know how you do it. I don't even know how the kids trip over each other, if there's even enough room to trip and fall over each other. But here, you know, this is like a lot of communities that people call home, have the infrastructure, have their family here, but some have fallen on hard times, Ernie. And I think in this moment we're in our politics, the anger, the frustration, I think it comes back down to the struggle that workers feel, because for 40 years we've been cheated, wages have been taken, benefits have diminished, and we're just coming out of a pandemic that with the inflation that's hurting people. And then having people blamed for the inflation when we know it's our corporate masters who do this. I think there's a moment where we have to start talking to each other and coming back to some common sense.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, the median income for Woodbury County is just above $31,000. And so there's definitely room for improvement there. I think some of the things that the state has done overall to take kind of control of the counties and the cities and what they can do is hurting the cities and counties overall.
Now let's talk about the investments, because I've been talking to people here and go, look, this area's it's struggling a little bit, and I think you said it during the break, things aren't all rosy and wonderful here. There's some struggles. And the question then becomes, how do we move in that direction? Now, as I understand, this was once a very thriving area, right?
It was. We used to be called Little Chicago. Had a lot of things going on, and it seems like we've been shrinking ever since about the early 60s, late 60s, right in there.
And why is that?
I haven't been able to pinpoint it, Rick. I often wonder what we could do. I see cities to the north, cities to the south expanding, growing, and Sioux City just kind of stays stagnant.
Now, is it a policy issue? Is it business issue? Is it your fault as a labor leader because you're tyrannical? What seems to be the focus of what you got?
I think too much around here, and I'll speak on construction. State law has lowest bid, lowest responsive bidder, and for whatever reason, the responsible, responsive part is never defined or checked out, and we always go with the lowest bid, which means it's not always good. You don't always get the quality work that you want, and you don't usually end up with the price that they give you in the beginning of the project.
No, you look at the perfect example, and I always talk about the Tale of Two Bridges. You've got the Tappan Zee out in New York that was built with a project labor agreement, all prevailing wage work, all union work. It was done on time, under budget, all of that stuff, and a quality job, and done, actually done. And then I look at the bridge in Oakland, the Bay Bridge there, which was not done under a project labor agreement, wasn't focused on union labor. In fact, from what I understand, they actually brought Chinese welders in to do some of the work on the Chinese steel that was defective, and it was over budget, way over time, and it's never going to be finished. They're never going to finish that bridge entirely because, well, foundationally, it's not right.
Right, and that's what you get. That's lowest bid. The old president made some changes to some rules about independent contractors and being able to classify workers as independent contractors more easily. And that sure did help him get through some of the red tape, but it causes a lot of problems because what happens is a subcontractor will hire another subcontractor. That subcontractor will go to the state, get a registration to be a contractor, and then he'll start hiring his friends, his buddies. He'll start bringing workers from other states. We call them labor brokers. And a lot of times, most cases, those workers don't realize that they're not covered by workman's comp. They're not paying into the unemployment insurance. They're not having federal and state taxes deducted from their pay. Sometimes they get paid cash. Sometimes they get paid check. Sometimes they don't get paid at all. And that's kind of where I come in to play. Kind of keep an eye on those workers and make sure that they are covered with workman's comp. It's a very important issue with me to be safe on projects. And then we just do whatever we can to help the other workers and help them to realize there is a better way to go about this. And it comes with good pay and good benefits, and that's joining a union.
Absolutely. Now, I remember when I first learned about independent contractors, and they called them subcontractors back then. Right when I got out of high school, I took a job building houses. And it was great. I loved the work. I loved, learning new things. But a guy shot a nail in my foot with a nail gun. And the boss is like, well, I don't know what you're going to do. And I'm going, well, you've got workers' comp. He goes, no, you're a subcontractor. You're on your own, buddy. And that was the last day I worked building houses.
Yep. It happens more often than not. And I see it a lot in our industry, and it's something I fight against daily. I know we need to change some laws at the state level. I work a lot with local government. We try to pass responsible contractor language. We've been able to do that successfully a couple of times. I've got it passed with the county, and then they had a big project go out and decided that they didn't really want to use that responsible contractor language because they wouldn't get the lowest price.
Right.
Now, they don't care so much about the best quality. They just want the lowest price.
No, and that's an important part of this. You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Ernie Colt. Ernie's a business representative with the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, NCSRCC.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. You can check out the work that they do, especially if you're here in the Sioux City, Iowa area. Now, again, there is that transient part of this, what we know is where states that don't have prevailing wage laws, they generally lose their skilled workforce, and you end up having to bring people in from out of the area, and they're generally the lowest paid, most exploitable workers possible, and the kind of work they leave behind generally is not the greatest. And I've said a bunch of times in this program, like, if someone's building the school that my kid's going to go to, I want the person who put the roof on to have his kid sitting right next to mine so that they do the best job that they can do, not some fly-by-night contractor who's just going to get the contract done, fill his pockets, and leave. And I think most people believe that how it should be, right?
Correct.
The question is why don't we have, why isn't this front and foremost in our policy discussions? Why are these things not things that we debate and discuss when we talk about all this other nonsense that fills our political discussions? Why isn't this front and center? And there is the right answer.
Yeah, it puzzles me too, Rick. I don't understand. And it's all about the dollar. It's all about getting it done the cheapest. That's all I can figure out.
But is it the cheapest? And I go back to my Tale of Two Bridges scenario. That bridge in New York was done on time, under budget. And the people who did those jobs made good, solid union wages with good benefits and health security and retirement security and safe working conditions and all of that. The other one, way over budget. Never going to be done. It seems simple to me. It seems like the answer is right there. We just, well, we've been trained to hate unions and trained to hate workers and their ability to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions. For me, that seems to be the simple answer. Do you agree, disagree?
I agree. I do. I agree. I think there's a stigma that the unions have, and it's getting better. It's been a lot of years of hard work to try and educate people in the community and let them know what's going on. It's still an issue, and we need to get that changed. And I think with President Biden's Infrastructure and Jobs Act, and we don't want to forget the Jobs Act part because it is going to create a lot of jobs for our building trades workers across the nation, and it's going to open things up and hopefully. Create a lot more work on, other than the infrastructure. Yep. And that's a lot of the work that we're going to try to capture as well.
No, it's important. And one of the things you said to me before when you sat down that I found so important, because often labor is saddled with it. Well, you just care about your members, this narrow self-interest. One of the first things you said is, look, it's not just about my members. It's about all carpenters. It's about all workers that we're fighting for. And I think that's an important distinction to make.
Absolutely. Yeah, when I see workers on projects being taken advantage of, it's in my best interest and everybody's best interest to try and have a conversation with that worker and let him know there is a better way and we're there to help him find that better way.
Yeah. Now, we've had Marty Walsh, the labor secretary, on the program a number of times over the last several months. And I think, one of the reasons I voted for Joe Biden was Marty Walsh or someone like him in that position. And really, all of the government agencies. The last administration had a person who was in charge of the wage theft division who was accused of wage theft. Right. I don't think I want someone who... I don't want someone in the position of stopping wage theft to have someone who has actual knowledge on how to commit wage theft. I want someone who's going to stop it. And that's why I vote for Joe Biden, because he's going to put people and has put people into places that are going to make lives better. And I think Marty Walsh is one of those guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. Marty's made some big changes already. One of the changes is working on misclassification of workers and independent contractors, and he's doing a great job. We've just got a couple more years, before the next election, and we really need to make things happen while he's in office. So looking forward to it.
No, and again, I come back to this wage theft. And the reason I started there is, wage theft, we know you can add up all of the bank robberies, all of the convenience store stick-ups, all of the robberies in this country. You can add them all up and total that up, and it's still 1/10 of what wage theft is.
Right.
I mean, one of the biggest crimes in this country is wage theft, and yet you don't ever see the wage thieves being locked up. Maybe a little slap on the wrist, don't do it again, post a notice, sorry. But we don't perp walk them. We don't put them on the evening news. And I think we should be. And I want an administration who's going to aggressively go after these wage thieves.
Absolutely. Yeah, our state has a $600 million a year issue with tax fraud and wage theft. And that's a lot of money. It happens a lot more than people realize. It's a battle out there every day, Rick.
No, this is why your point about misclassification, this is why this is so important, because one of the ways that people get cheated is out of unemployment, out of workers' comp. My situation, I had to pay for the hole in my foot myself. because, well, I wasn't technically an employee, but yet I was completely at their control, told what to do, when to do, when to take lunch, when to go home, when to start, all of this stuff. In fact, they gave me the tools to do it, but yet somehow magically through some designation, I was a subcontractor. I was an independent contractor. And this to me is one of these central pieces of what has to change in this country, especially as we move to this gig economy, which I think I read a statistic like 42% of people now are in the gig economy. That just means that someone's robbing them blind.
Right.
It doesn't seem any, it doesn't, I don't know why it doesn't seem that simple as it is to me, to everybody.
I agree. And you know, when we live it every day and I see it every day, I understand it perfectly, and to convey that message to others, it does get difficult, and they often wonder, you know, does it really happen here in Sioux City? Is it really happening?
Happens everywhere.
Is he pulling our leg, you know? But it's true, you know, and I've taken state senators and legislators on projects and have them eyewitness what's happening in right here in Sioux City, and it really opened their eyes, and hopefully we'll get some things happening at the state level.
Now, for me, this is the thing that can unite us. You know, as a country, we seem to be very polar opposites. Whatever hat you bought in the last election, the red one or the blue one, whichever team shirt you wear or flag you fly, that seems to be where we are, where I think talking about wages, hours, conditions, talking about work, this is where we bring people back together. Because all of our societal problems we've dealt with in the past in the workplace, and we've dealt with it effectively, and we've dealt with it in a way that we've been able to move forward. I think we're at that moment now where labor, we have to figure out how to bring people back together.
Agreed. You know, one of the things I always resort back to is the training that we have. And if you start at the top, at the national level, apprenticeships, they're pushing apprenticeships. They get down to the state level, they're pushing apprenticeships. Well, we've had our apprenticeship going for over 100 years now, and we're pretty good at it. And so when these kids come out of high school and they join the apprenticeship and they put forth the effort, they go the 4 years of the apprenticeship, they work their butts off, they work out in the field, they go to class, and then at the end of their apprenticeship, a project will come up and we're overbid. Well, we don't get to work. So it's funny how we want all of our kids to go through these apprenticeships, but yet at the end of the day, we're not going to give them the work because they cost too much. It's silly. It doesn't make sense, and we need to fix that.
No, I'm right there with you. Ernie, I appreciate you taking a little time for us, sharing your thoughts. Keep up the great work. Keep up the fight. Things are going to get better.
They will. They will. Good wages, good benefits. It's a good thing. We need it. I'm going to continue the fight, and we'll get there.
Good stuff. Ernie Colt, I appreciate the time. Ernie Colt, business rep, North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters, NCSRCC.org, the website. We'll get links out on social media. I can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1877. That was the day that John D. Rockefeller and his company Standard Oil struck a deal with the Pennsylvania Railroad that would cement his monopoly on the nation's oil refineries. In the early 1870s, Rockefeller was building his oil empire out from its center in Cleveland, Ohio. In October of 1877, the nation went through a great upheaval, a popular uprising of 250,000 railroad workers and their allies. The uprising had only ended after a series of bloody skirmishes in rail centers across the country that saw 100 workers killed. The Pennsylvania Railroad had lost $3 million in destroyed property. Recognizing the railroad was in trouble, Rockefeller decided to capitalize on the opportunity. The railroad had just entered into a partnership with one of Rockefeller's competitors, the Empire Transport Company, earlier that year. The strike had weakened both partners. Rockefeller was able to purchase Empire's assets far below their actual value. For example, he purchased an Empire oil refinery in Pennsylvania for $500,000. Within 4 years, that refinery had earned Rockefeller three times that amount. But the most important part of the deal was that Rockefeller could ship his oil on the Pennsylvania Railroad so cheaply that he could drive out his remaining competition. Standard Oil was shipped on rail for 8 cents a barrel. Other companies had to pay more than $1.44. By the 1890s, Rockefeller's refineries handled 90% of the nation's oil. His ruthless efforts to drive out competition made Rockefeller increasingly unpopular with the public and the target of anti-monopoly reformers. In addition, Rockefeller and his company became increasingly notorious for their heavy-handed anti-labor practices, most infamously for the Ludlow Massacre of 1914.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we finish up our day here in Sioux City, Iowa, and I gotta tell you, we had, this was an amazing place. You know, as we pulled into the lot today, a giant grain silo in the background, the CWA hall right up against it. In fact, when we got out, almost blown across the street. The wind was so bad. And it was one of these scenarios where the guy goes, oh, you know, it's not always this bad. And I was waiting for him to say, no, it's not always this bad. It's usually worse because the wind has been, well, wow. You know, we're traveling in a 31-foot RV, and it is all over the place. Windy. Well, it's flat, so nothing really to stop that. But, you know, just a great place. One of the things that I found funny is that the guy said, no, never mind the building. It's laid out a little weird. It's probably not your usual union hall. And I'm like, why is that? He goes, well, it used to be a strip club. And I go, okay, well, you know, we've put it to good use. Organizing workers and helping the community, because now it's where the Democrats are running their campaigns out of. It's where CWA holds their meetings and does their work as well. But what a great place. Just the kind of, you know, true grit kind of feel that you get in the labor community. But, you know, I go back to something that Ernie said a minute ago when we were talking about their apprenticeship programs. And you know, the need for more investment in schools, the need for more vocational training. You know, when I was in school, everyone took a shop class, everyone took the metals class, everyone took a little bit of, because that was what a well-rounded education was part of. Being able to pick up a hammer, everyone should know how to do it. Being able to turn a wrench, being able to, you know, do a couple of things, everyone should do. And sadly, over these past years, that has gone away from the schools, and unions have been forced out because, you know, they're obviously not doing the kind of vo-tech that they're doing now. Now there's a need, a want. There are people going, hey, you know what? Maybe it wasn't such a great idea to not invest in the trades. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea to say everyone has to go to college, because, well, we need massive investments in infrastructure. And in fact, we've got a president who got a bill passed that's going to provide some pretty significant investment in the future of our country. And, well, you know, we need people to do it. And what I found interesting in some of the conversations we've had today is labor has turned into one of the biggest advocates for immigration reform. Because as they were pointing out, you know, these contractors are using undocumented workers and, you know, kind of, you know, sneaking them around because it's profitable. And by having an immigration policy that brings those people out of the shadows, gives them the opportunity to get into apprenticeship programs and get jobs and make sure that everyone makes a decent wage, maybe we could solve a couple of problems all at once. Get our infrastructure built, have good, decent wages for people, and, oh, by the way, you know, be a decent country, give people hope and opportunity. Just kind of a thought. Love to hear yours, though. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell us what you think so far of the Working Class Heroes radio tour, brought to you by the good folks at the American Family Voices Group, also our friends at Courier Newsroom. Thank you for the investment and the help as we travel. We are going to continue here in Iowa, heading off to Cedar Rapids in the morning. Looking forward to that. Again, you've got any questions, comments? I'd love to hear it. Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks so much for being here. Remember, if you miss any portion of our program or any of the programs we do, TheRickSmithShow.com, that's where you go to get our podcast. Make sure you share with your friends and neighbors, especially that one wearing the red hat down the street with the weird flag out front. Might learn something. Might be good for them. Might help save your community. Bring us back together. Do a little democracy stuff. Thanks for being here. See you next time.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. We will be returning on January 3rd.
You've been listening to the Rick Smith Show.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W22 ADP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.